Getting together, you and I chatting it up on Tuesday, June 4th, 2024, is Connecticut Today. We welcomed a nationally known immigration attorney, Renata Castro, back to the program to talk about President Biden's immigration and border executive order that he unveiled earlier in the day. Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio dropped by also to talk about the latest per pupil public school spending figures in Connecticut. And we've been talking about immigration on this show, and right at the top of our show at 2 o'clock Eastern, we had Joe Biden announce some changes he's making by executive order, not by legislation, to maybe defuse a hot election issue. And he's already getting it from both sides, the left and the right. And joining us right now is one of our guests when it comes to immigration and border issues. Renata Castro is the founding member of USA for All, a full-service immigration firm. She represents a wide range of immigration clients, from accomplished athletes and extraordinary individuals to investors, victims of domestic violence, as well as those seeking a new life in the U.S. The website, we should mention that also, USA, the number four, and then all. USA, the number four, and the word all.com. Renata Castro again. Renata, hi. It's Paul in Connecticut. How are you?
I am doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, Renata, let me ask you up top. What do you think? Give us a broad view. I guess we're kind of not as surprised with this, Renata, given the election year politicking in this. But as a lot of people are pointing out, this is already going to face challenges here, is it not?
Yes. I have to say that irrespective of my political preferences or choice of vote, I think that my job is to be impartial, especially as a lawyer. And I have to say, I was really disappointed and very, when I say annoyed, because when Trump did something similar, we all just, you know, the legal community sued in horror of the letter of the law being violated. But that's exactly what's happening in front of our own eyes, all at the expense of gathering or spinning around a better media cycle for an election. And we should not be standing for this, no matter where an individual stands when it comes to immigration law or if they're in favor or against. But just passing another executive order that won't solve the issue, but that will gather the attention of every news media outlet in the country, is not what a president or any member of the House or the Senate are elected to do. They're there to vote for laws that will make this a better country. And this is clearly not it.
And Renata, I was surprised when I got to the station today. I heard about it coming in, driving in, and I start to go to the web and read everything. Now, the cutoff point, the average daily cutoff point in the Senate bill that went nowhere was 4,000 crossings between accepted ports of entry. That was the one that went nowhere, got shot down twice. I was stunned, were you, when I saw that the number was way down at 2,500. Did that surprise you? I thought, okay, maybe he's going to say, listen, let's do 4,000 a day, which some thought was too low or too high. But my jaw hit the floor when I saw 2,500 daily.
I personally agree with you that the number is very low, but in hindsight, even 4,000 or 10,000 would be a direct violation of current law. It's important for all of us to understand that asylum is a law that is codified, voted, vetted, and in the code of federal statutes. So when an individual presents themselves at a port of entry to seek asylum, contrary to popular belief, they're not breaking the law. They're actually following the law. What this is going to do is this is going to create much more chaos at the border, because now those who cannot enter because the threshold will be met, and they will do an average, and the processing centers will not reopen the very next day. I believe there is a delay of 2 weeks until they're stabilized based on some preliminary information that I got. So this individual that's trying to protect their families and their families' lives, they're not necessarily Mexican. So where are they staying? They're not staying at the Ritz-Carlton. These people are going to try to cross. Coyotes are going to take advantage of this opportunity. And yet again, we're refusing to put pressure on the House and on the Senate to pass an immigration reform that would allow asylum petitioners to already come to the United States with their cases vetted and approved. This is just more of the same.
Now, Renata Castro, by the way, is the guest, a well-known, nationally known immigration lawyer, USA, the number 4, and then all.com. So, Renata, correct me if I'm wrong, but the way I'm reading this is for what happens between the ports of entry, right? Are the accepted ports of entry, which people can find easily listed, are they at all themselves affected, the ones that are already set up? And is this just only pertaining to people who want to come across between those ports? Am I reading this right or not?
So it's for anyone who is presenting themselves at a port of entry, mm-hmm. And for those who have not followed or used the CBP One app, mm-hmm. which is an application that allows them to schedule an appointment with an immigration officer at the border to go through the initial processing. And that was also, the rollout was not very effective. I guess is the right word. That was a disaster. That was certainly a lot of money and time and just not a well thought out process. They meant well, but the execution just lagged. So it's important for the listeners to understand that they will try to control those individuals that mm-hmm. are presenting themselves at the port of entry. But there are still individuals who try to come into the country. It's an extensive border.
Sure.
And most importantly, they only address the Mexican border. There's no comment of the U.S.-Canadian border mm-hmm. And those ports of entry. So now there's going to be pressure on the Canadian side as well to increase the number of asylum applicants who will go to that country and try to get into the United States.
Finally, Renata, you mentioned in your previous comments here the coyotes. We're not talking about the cartoon character, the animals, the human smugglers, the human traffickers, the coyotes. I'm sure in your practice you've heard stories about these people, these men and women who, am I right, Renata, soak these people for everything they have saved to try and get them across the border. Explain to my listeners how pervasive they are and the kind of money that they're turning over to these men and women to try and get them across the border.
So, you know, your radio station is mainly listened to in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And because I have a national practice, we represent several victims of human trafficking that may be your neighbors in Connecticut. I have mm-hmm. a lot of clients in Bridgeport, in Fairfield. These individuals are kidnapped. Several women are victims of sexual violence, and they don't have an understanding. If you live abroad, and I'm not saying that this is a justification, but you're approached by someone who says, listen, I can get you into the United States. It's safe. It's secure. They will say that they have contacts at CBP, that people will facilitate their entry, and then they find themselves in a hostage house in Arizona, now being extorted money or being sexually abused. And the stories we hear are just heartbreaking. I'm sure that all of us sitting here will say, oh, I would never fall for that. But these are criminals. And these are individuals who, the coyotes, the ones who are helping people cross into the United States, who are taking advantage of people who are really desperate, who are seeking protection, and who still believe in the American dream. And, you know, do you really blame them? You may not agree, but do you blame them? So we have to turn our efforts. And the Biden administration did publish on their executive order that they are allocating more resources mm-hmm. to prosecute and arrest more human traffickers. But I doubt that that's going to be sufficient. So closing down the border without changing asylum law will just make these coyotes have a more prolific time offering their services to all these people who are sitting in a tent in Mexico and waiting for weeks or months to come into the United States.
Yeah, and Renata, I always say whenever we see numbers, 4,000, 4,500, 2,500, 2,000, I mean, the coyotes, they can count, too. I mean, they know how to use spreadsheets. You know what I mean? So, you know, they know what the limits, right, are going to be. So won't they adjust, if you will? I hate to use that term, but they'll respond to this, too. These people aren't stupid. This is big business for them.
no, this is big business. And I have seen some coyotes offer the crossing for $5,000, only for it to end up being $50,000 per individual. Sometimes people are, you know, if you have a gun pointed to one of your loved ones' head, you're going to figure out a way to come up with that money. And it may seem like a, you know, fantasy, something that doesn't happen in real life, but it does. I think that today, unfortunately, the letter of the law in the United States lost because we're using executive orders for not for the purpose, for the legislative purpose for which they were designed. We are just giving the House and the Senate a pass for not doing their job. And yet we have criminals, we have coyotes who will take major advantage of this. Is big business for them, all at the expense of an electoral cycle. It's pretty sad.
The website USA, the number 4, and then the word all, USA for All Immigration Law. Renata Castro has been the guest, as you heard her say. She does represent a lot of people in Connecticut, including in Bridgeport and the surrounding area. Renata, thank you for the time. Appreciate it. And we'll chat down the road. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. There you go. Every, what's today? Tuesday. That's right. It's been a long day, kids. Every Tuesday at this time, Megan Portfolio joins us. Check out the Hartford Portfolio at theyankeeinstitute.org. Megan, how are you today?
Oh, I'm dealing with first world problems. The central air is dead.
Oh, no. Well, better now, better on a day like today than when it's like 94. Oh, central air is not working.
It must be a government conspiracy.
Yeah. It's all this is clearly Merrick Garland's fault. So have you called the proper authorities to come and look at this?
I have called the appropriate people, and I chiseled them down as much as I possibly could, and they hopefully are coming out on Friday, and I will be further in debt because I live in Connecticut.
Well, it's, you know, hey, join the party. You know, I'm spinning, as a friend of mine says, Megan, all the time, let's spin the wheel and see which bill we won't pay this month. Now, speaking of paying bills.
Oh, my favorite topic.
Yeah, speaking of paying bills, you've taken a look in your latest piece here regarding school costs, per pupil costs, and importantly, results. So what should people know about this?
All right. I'm going to try to make these super boring numbers slightly digestible.
All right.
So according to the U.S. Census Bureau survey that they put out last month, Connecticut is the fifth highest, and that includes D.C., in the amount we spend per pupil.
All right.
So what that equals is in Connecticut, we spend $24,453,000 per pupil.
Per year.
Now, if you
per year.
Per year.
Wow.
Per year.
Wow.
Now, if you compare that to our neighboring states, New York was actually the number one. I'm not even surprised by that because they're worse off than we are. Mm-hmm. But New York is upward almost $30,000 a student, and they're projected to go even higher. But if you look at Massachusetts, where we pay 11% more, and if you look at Rhode Island, I think it's about 22% more, 22.5% more, we spend more than in Rhode Island. So that's just to, you know, perspective to that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take how much we're spending per pupil, but and you look at enrollment numbers, and then you look at achievement scores, it's the reverse. It's going in the reverse direction. Our enrollment has literally gone down every year since 2006. 2006, except for 1 year, we increased by like 100. So we literally lost 65,000 students.
Wow.
Between 2006 and 2023. But the spending, it keeps increasing. And if you compare it to the national average, I mean, back, oh God, I forgot what year it was that I went back to. But going back, we were only spending maybe like $3,000 more per pupil compared to the U.S. Average, that has ballooned to almost $9,000 more than what the U.S. spends on average.
With 65,000 fewer pupils.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we have that minimum budget requirement, which makes it that we have to spend as much as we spent the previous year. So even if we know we have less students, we still have to spend that, and well, it's usually plus, and I'm sure all your listeners are going through this right now during the budget process.
Mm-hmm.
The schools are all but fund our schools, fund our schools. And it's like, you're kind of being funded. It's interesting if you look at the difference between the in-classroom spending and like the out-of-classroom spending, like the bureaucratic overhead. We're like in the top in the country for what we spend in this overhead. And we actually even beat New York. We spend almost $9,000 per pupil
in
just bureaucracy.
So the bureaucratic costs you found per pupil top $9,000 per pupil per year.
Yeah, it's like $8,870,000, but per year. And that's all your administration. And none of this money is actually in the classroom. This is all the out-of-classroom stuff.
So how does this, Megan, at all, and the guest is Megan Portfolio from the Yankee Institute. Check out the Hartford Portfolio, of course, yankeeinstitute.org. Does this at all have any correlation to student performance? Is anything getting better?
Oh, these poor kids. I feel my heart breaks for them because, no, it's not getting better. It's getting worse. Excuse me, the allergies are affecting my voice today.
All right, yeah.
I'm like, who is that talking? It doesn't sound like me.
You're
prior to the pandemic, we really weren't doing so great. So they have this achievement ranking, and mm-hmm. it's a 0 to 100 in points. And the state likes to be around 75, and we were barely at that as a whole. But since the pandemic, the 2018-2019 school year, we have not recovered at all. And it's horrendous. And if you look at students of color, it's even worse. Mm-hmm. They have not been able, like in math, Latino students are at 48.8. Like we're hurting these kids. I mean, it's not their fault. They're not performing, and it's why are they not performing? I mean, I'm sure a lot of it had to do with the shutdown and all that remote learning. And some teachers were there actively on their Zoom. Others were on vacation. I'm sure you've seen the news articles on that, you know, zooming in, calling it in from the beach, but they've not recovered. And I don't know when that's going to be, they're actually going to get back to those levels.
And, you know, Megan, on top of that, I mean, let alone, you know, I mean, I'm sure, too, even if we didn't have the pandemic or even if we didn't have it, Megan, to that extent, I mean, every year we hear about, well, you know, look at the underperforming. And it's sad, you're right, because the students are getting cheated out of, you know, the performance they should have. And I have always contended, Megan, that there may be things going on here that you could spend 3, 4, 5 times the money, and it may not help. You know, maybe it will, maybe it wouldn't. But, you know, short of, you know, hiring a separate teacher and maybe a tutor for each student, I don't know how this ever gets better, because at least around here, it rarely, if ever, does.
You know, there are options. There are options out there that other states are doing. I've talked about this on your show before. Is scholarships to send kids to a private school, and with using tax credits. And it's the teachers' union to stop everything. Some districts are crying, literally on their hands and knees, begging for charter schools. The community wants it, and the teachers' union stop it. So anytime anyone comes up with an idea outside a public school, the teachers unions squash it. And if the lawmakers don't do their bidding, they've done this. It's been reported, I think, in CT Mirror 2 years ago.
Yeah.
They were sending threatening emails like, you will vote no for this or you will not get our support.
Well, aren't there two charters, Megan, still being held up? One in Danbury, and I think the other one's in Meriden or Middletown, right?
In my town, Middletown.
Yeah,
they were approved. The state approved them. They have the go-ahead. They just need the funding. And every time someone tries to get that funding, the teachers' unions come in.
They get threatened.
They're like, no.
Yeah, they get threatened.
And it's like, guys, you cry over here because you want more money and more funding. And they always say their class sizes are too big, but we have one of the best student-teacher ratios in the country. But regardless, we're actually like trying to help you. And you just shoot down everything because it's all about the dollars. It's all about the Benjamins for you guys. And they will just and they don't care about the kids. They care about their enrollment and getting more teachers and more members and more money. And so if the students' performance, I mean, the teachers still get their raises. Their raises are not tied to performance like it is in the private sector. So if you have, if you're not performing and your students aren't performing, you get your raise. You don't get, there's no punishment.
Yeah. The piece is called Connecticut Public Schools. There's no such thing as too much. Folks, check it out. Megan's done a good job here of assembling the numbers and seeing how Connecticut stacks up on school spending to other area states and nationwide, of course, at theyankeeinstitute.org. Megan, thank you. Listen, I will light a candle for your air conditioner. I'm sure next week when we talk, everything will be fine and frosty, okay?
Oh my God, I'm so hot right now, and hopefully next week I have my voice. I'm like, who is talking right now?
All right. Well, take care.
All right, bye, Paul.
Thanks, Megan. All right, yeah, better the AC breaks down now than the middle of summer.